You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is The Nth Degree. I'm Mark from Hampshire in England.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. Mark from Hampshire. What's that music I'm hearing? It's getting louder and louder. What's the deal with this?
Once a year we celebrate with stupid hats and plastic plates the fact that you were able to make another trip around the sun. And the whole clan gathers round and gifts and laughter do abound. And we let out a joyful sound and sing that stupid song.
Happy birthday!
Now you're 1 year older.
Happy birthday!
Your life still isn't over.
Happy birthday!
You did not accomplish much, but you didn't die this year. I guess that's good enough.
Is it somebody's birthday?
Yes, it was my birthday yesterday. It was my 42nd birthday, so in great nerd tradition, I now have the answer to life, the universe, and everything.
Well, I missed that 5 years ago then. If it's a 42nd, why didn't I discover it 5 years ago? Maybe it's different over here than it is over there.
Yes, maybe it is a little different over here, but I'm 21 twice.
So. Are you?
That's a good way to look at it.
Yes, I'm 21 twice, yeah. What? That's all good. It's funnily, I remember vividly being 21 back in 1995, and now I'm double that age, which is a little scary, but it's all good.
And in March, I'll be celebrating the 27th anniversary of my 21st birthday, then.
Wow.
Yeah, tell me about it. Wow. Do you remember when you were like 11, 12, thinking, boy, 40 is so old?
Yeah, I distinctly remember turning 10 because it was double digits and a decade, and I do distinctly remember that back in 1984. And I remember big birthdays like 16, 18, 21, yeah. 30, 40.
And you know, there's...
The next significant birthday is in 8 years, obviously, at 50.
Right. And you know what Let me think here. What movie? I'm not sure which of the Star Trek movies it was, but... something that Picard says that is becoming more and more clear is that there are fewer days ahead than there are behind. And so...
probably generations, I would have thought.
That's yeah,
the
sort
of theme of that movie. I think it's generations.
Yeah, it's after Robert dies in the fire.
Yeah.
I think it's a highly inappropriate time to bring up, you know, what time is the fire in which we burn. So, let's keep it happy around here.
Yes.
It's nearly Christmas.
It is. It is almost Christmas. It is the 22nd of December as we record. So James.
Okay,
enough of this Star Trek nonsense.
Someone's going
Star yes. Wars Rogue.
Someone's going Rogue.
Yes, someone is.
What
going
did
Rogue.
You think? We'll discuss it briefly. We will talk Trek, but I think Star Wars is of interest to many of the listeners. Okay. So, what did you think?
Okay, so I took the kids to see Rogue One. Three of the kids. One was too small, and the other one was actually sick that day. And they thought. Actually, they thought it was awesome. And by the way, I'm actually... I'm talking about a 12-year-old, a 10-year-old, and an 8-year-old. And I know there has been some issue around how scary it is. Or kind of how...
It's,
you know,
it's
how
a little
dark.
It's a little dark.
I actually didn't think it was that bad. I think that there's... You know, yes, there's a little bit of... Lots of kind of... Well, violence isn't the right word. There's a lot of intense fighting and also kind of armed combat with... You know, laser pistols, that kind of stuff. Of course, that's the case. I thought it was fine. I thought it was good. I didn't have that much to complain about. I thought that it worked. It worked exceptionally well as a prequel to the story that we know, because I always felt that, despite you knowing how effectively it's going to end, I thought that there was enough there with what they did that allowed them to kind of weave the story and for you to be invested in their characters as they have like the final pitched battle. You know, you don't know who's coming out alive or not, and they could have taken it in any direction. And I thought that the way they did it was very good. I think also, you know, I think technically it's all very good and very nice. And I thought that it was there wasn't anything in there that was kind of particularly annoying. So I'm just thinking here about, the characters were all good. You got to see a bit of a Darth Vader. You got to see kind of the main players. I don't think there's that much to complain about. Obviously, the what's the name of the droid? The
K2SO.
K2SO. He was good. The
was
kids
great.
Loved him.
He was great.
He goes out in a blaze of glory, which is pretty impressive in the film.
I think, spoiler alert, but if you haven't seen Rogue One, then skip forward a couple of minutes, but everyone dies, and I think that was really good. And the one thing that I liked was we see the Rebellion for what they really should be. They're not all squeaky clean. Some of these guys in the Rebellion, they're criminals, and they're mercenaries. You know, they're not recruiting for the Boy Scouts here. You know, these are effectively... The Empire would refer to them as terrorists, and I did sort of get that vibe from some of them. Particularly, you know, very early on in the film where Cassian Andor killed that informer because he knew he was going to be caught by the stormtroopers, and he shoots him in the back and just kills him. And he says later on in the movie, you know, I've done things, you know, I've done some terrible, terrible things, but I've done them because I've believed I was doing it for a greater cause. And that is absolutely the case. He would have been sent to assassinate people and, you know, do some, you know, quite dreadful things. So I really liked that. I loved K2SO. It was nice to... The Vader scenes were good. They were fairly short. It was nice to see him in the Bacta tank regenerating. I thought that was cool. One thing that slightly took me out of it was when he walked out towards Krennic. And because it's obviously played by a different actor, it's not played by David Prowse, his gait was different, the way he walked was different, and I noticed that, because I've seen Star Wars a lot, and he walked differently, and it was like, that's not Vader, because his walk was slightly different. But the end Vader scene, OMG, that was fantastic. I because I went to the midnight showing and then I went again last Saturday on my own to see it. And people's jaws, you could hear jaws hitting the floor as Vader was, you know, invading the ship, and the rebels were screaming, "God, please help us, please help us." And there's people just flying everywhere and floating, you know, being thrown against the ceiling with the Force. That was incredible. I absolutely loved that.
Imagine if that was the prequel series, though. I mean, it would have been so much better to have it in this kind of time frame rather than him as a 4-year-old or whatever Phantom Menace. It seems like this is really the story that they wanted to tell, or should have wanted to tell, kind of leading up into Star Wars or the original Star Wars. Actually, you are about to mention Tarkin.
Yes. So, obviously, Peter Cushing died in 1994. I thought, for the most part, it was good enough. There was a few parts where it looked dodgy. Princess Leia at the end looked pretty dodgy, but she was only on screen for a few seconds. I did have an inkling that Tarkin was going to be in it, or had seen a rumour. Didn't think that Princess Leia would be in it at the end. The CGI
spoilers.
There was... I did say spoilers. You should have seen it by now. Come on, really. I'm not sure when will this show drop, Lou? In the next week or two?
Actually, it's going up tonight.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. Spoilers. If you haven't seen Rogue One, then sorry.
Yeah, maybe I'll put a little spoiler sound effect in the beginning.
Yeah, put a little spoiler in. That would be
I think there are only two... there are only two things that slightly irked me. I didn't think the CGI recreation was that great. And I think that, you know, I know that you can now say that, well, it's the best they can do, it's the best it's ever been done, etc., etc. Unfortunately, I fear it's going to date the film. So I think that in 5 years' time, you're going to look at it and you're going to think, oh, wow, I mean, it was better than we'd seen so far, but it's not quite there. And
yes,
I think
because in 5 years' time, the CGI will be so good that you literally could bring back Humphrey Bogart in a movie and it would look like him. Yeah, I get that.
So I think they could have... I mean, considering that they are going with lookalikes for other people as well, or, you know, effectively just recasting younger people, even if you have to, like, make them up. We've watched There Be Three Ziyaos, and we're fine with that. So I'm more than happy for someone to have, kind of, recast, you know, various members. I think that they actually get away with Leia a little bit better on the grounds that she... She's not integral to the story, and she doesn't need to say anything or do anything or stand in a way that she can even be seen. So I think they had a lot more freedom on that one. Even if they wanted to reproduce it CGI, they could have just used a still image, and there's not as much interaction and not as much... Well, I saw a review saying that because Tarkin was kind of older and had more wrinkles, he would need like a higher resolution than a cake face put onto Leia from her mid-20s. Yeah. The one thing I'm going to slightly moan about, I think it was missing the John Williams score.
Yes. I first went to see it at the midnight showing and I was quite tired and I was just trying to focus on the story and didn't pay too much attention to the score. But when I watched it for the second time, because I'd read something that said the score wasn't as good, so I was sort of deliberately listening out for it. The music was quite good. It's Michael Giacchino. He does a very good job on scores. It was very noticeably a Michael Giacchino score. It wasn't bad, but it's not John Williams awesome. And, of course, the only time we get the traditional da-da-da-da-da is right at the end when the credits come up. So I'd probably have to see it a few more times to give a real opinion on the score, but I do think, although the music was good, it was missing that Star Warsiness that we all know and love. But I'm taking the kids to see it on next Tuesday, so that's the 27th, because they're very excited for it, and I think they'll love it. I really, really do. So I'll try and pay a little bit more attention to the score again next week. Well, Lou, you've been very quiet. Should we talk about some Star Trek?
Sure. Hey, why not? I'm sure my wife will be interested in watching that movie, and of course I'll have to go with her, so I'll watch it too, and maybe I'll let you know when I think about it.
I mean, you you've seen episode 4, A New Hope, right? You have seen Star Wars.
Is that the one where
Is that the one where
what's her name comes back?
The whales.
I mean, who was?
It's the original Star Wars movie where they first have the Death Star and we meet Luke Skywalker and Han Solo, the original 1970s.
Oh yeah, you mean the movie Star Wars? Yes, I have seen the movie Star Wars. Yes. I don't know what so they call it now, but I remember that. Hey, The Empire Strikes Back, things like that. But
yeah, so it's Star Wars.
Yeah,
but we just call it A New Hope because Star Wars is generally a franchise now. But yeah, you've seen Episode 4.
Okay.
Yeah, with Alec Guinness and yeah.
So some of us are still holding out and refusing it to call it A New Hope.
Yeah. No. No. Well, you know, I mean, if they're going to call Star Wars A New Hope, then
Well, to be fair, they did that in 1979 or around about that day. Anyway, yeah.
I think it was early 80s when they...
It's probably when Empire came out in 1980.
Actually, I think it's when it first landed on TV that it got rebranded A New Hope. So it's a long, long time ago, right?
Yeah, anyway.
And also the episode 4. It was never originally episode 4.
No, it wasn't. No, it was just Star Wars, yeah.
Yeah, I'll accept Star Wars A New Hope when the motion picture becomes the dreadful 2 hours.
There's nothing wrong with the motion
Star
picture.
Trek, nothing the wrong. Dreadful 2 hours.
No, it's not dreadful. There's nothing wrong with the motion picture. Well, there are things wrong with the motion picture, but I still enjoy it. It has pacing issues, but it's got an absolutely wonderful score. And it's the first time we hear the TNG music, of course, which is glorious in that movie. So there's a little segue into Star Trek: The Next Generation for you.
Yes,
I have to say, before we can segue, I was really disappointed today because I was going to go and see Arrival, which I don't know if either of you guys have
it. I did see your tweet, and I haven't seen it either. And people were raving about it, saying it was fantastic, and it's not on at my local cinema anymore. Mm. And I was like, bugger, I missed it because it looked
I was waiting to go. I was waiting to go, and it actually turned out that I checked the times, and I checked the times on the Tuesday, and I thought, I've missed the Tuesday show, and I'll see it Wednesday. But they switched the timetable on Wednesday. I thought they always switched the timetable on Thursday, but what do I know? But they switched it, so I missed it by a day, and I really wanted to go and see it, and I've heard nothing but good things, and I actually wanted to see it at the cinema, but, you get screwed over in life.
You'll have to wait for DVD.
Indeed.
Okay. All right. So, where were we here? Oh, yeah. Hey. Let's go ahead and discuss this episode.
Oh, let's talk about some Star Trek.
Okay, let's go.
Okay, the Nth Degree. So the synopsis for tonight's show is, after an encounter with a mysterious alien probe, Lieutenant Barclay begins to exhibit signs of profound intelligence, ultimately hooking himself into the ship's computer and hurling the Enterprise into apparent danger. This is the 19th episode of Season 4 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is April Fool's Day, 1991. Mm-hmm. Written by Joe Manosky and directed by Rob Legato. Guest stars include Dwight Mad Dog Schultz as Barclay, good old Mad Dog Murdoch there. Jim Norton as Albert Einstein. K.E. Kuta as the Cytherian. Saxon Trainor as Linda Larson. Who's Linda Larson? Anyway, Paige Lee Long as April Anaya. David Coburn as Ensign Brower. And Majel Barrett as the computer, at least for a while. So, what do we think about this episode? I'll go first. I think this is a great episode. I really, really enjoy this. It's not without its flaws, but it's a lot of fun. I do like Barclay, and it's nice to see him at least temporarily get out of his very nerdy, socially awkward way and, as he says himself in the episode, behave like everyone else, like a regular Starfleet officer. So I really like it, which is why I've come on for the episode.
Okay.
What about you guys?
All right, Doc, how about you?
So, at the time of recording, I don't think Lou and I have spoken about Star Trek for a number of weeks, so I think there's been a longer than usual delay. And whenever this happens, we always come back, and I always think, is it just that I'm missing Star Trek, or is this really, really good? Because I really enjoyed this week's episode, and I don't think it's perfect, and I do have, actually, I do have thoughts around what they tried to do with the Barkley character and turn him into a kind of like a superhero that I'm not entirely sure about. And there was a part of me that was rewatching this thinking, this is pretty great. It might be a great opportunity to kill the character off completely. Anyway, I actually really enjoyed. I really enjoyed this episode. I do remember liking it, and I think it's really. I think the really interesting part of it is the aliens at the end. I think there's a lot of fun along the way, but I think the concept of these aliens and how they go about communicating and dealing with other species is kind of like a. It's something that we don't see that often.
It's an interesting way of dealing with things, isn't it?
Okay, well, yeah, I echo a lot of that. I actually think this is a great episode, and you might figure out where my score is going to be because this episode goes on road trips with me.
Oh, okay, it's on the
road trip list. I love this episode. Yeah. And
this is also on one of my lists, so you'll probably know where my score's going to be as well. So.
And I think Doc might have actually given his away by now. So as I always do, I always take guesses at what our scores are going to be. So let me start the episode with mine here, Doc's here, Mark's there. And then we'll see.
We'll find out at the end if we're right.
So, hey, Lou, you only used one key there.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Believe it or not, okay. I didn't use one key. Okay. That doesn't mean I didn't use the number key on one and the home row key numbers on the underneath the F keys. But still, you never know. And I also did have to use the tab key to go to the next one. So.
Oh, because you were next. Yep.
All right. So there we are. That gives a little bit of that. So let me find my notes here. So we start out with a play called, is that Cyrano de Bergerac?
Cyrano de Bergerac.
I've never heard of that, so.
You've never heard of that? Have you seen the Steve Martin movie Roxanne?
No.
The guy where he's got the big nose. It's based on, that movie's based on Cyrano de Bergerac, the play. I'm not overly familiar with the play myself. I'm only sort of vaguely aware of it. But yeah, it tells the story. The guy's got a big nose. He's in love with a woman. I'm very much paraphrasing it here. So if anyone knows it really well, then I apologize. And then he helps. From what I remember, he's quite articulate, but the woman doesn't fancy him. She fancies some really handsome guy who's very socially awkward, and he helps set them up. I don't know if you know it any better than I do, James, but that's the way I would paraphrase it.
No, I do not know it any better than you do.
Oh. I think that's broadly correct.
Okay.
It's largely unimportant.
It is, but, you know, he has done better since because, you know, it's a good thing he's done better since too because the beginning part was kind of painful to watch for everyone in the audience. You know, Barkley's performance was okay, but clearly it wasn't rooted in the method. Shut up, Data. And so you could see that.
So Data's so rude in this. He shouldn't be so rude. Why is he so rude? I mean, usually it's Data. He's your kind of socially inadequate dude that doesn't pick up on other signals of, you know, how to say stuff properly. And here he seems to be a bit nasty. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so basically, obviously, they're setting his character up for some great things to come. And, of course, it will be in a holodeck near you. But the ship has been dispatched to the Argus Array. One of the most important things that we've never heard about in the past and we'll never hear about again.
Whoa. We hear about it again.
Yes, we do.
Did we go visit the Argus Array again?
I don't think we visit it. Did we visit it? We certainly hear of it again.
Okay, so the Argus Array is the thing that provides scans on Cardassia, I think.
Is it?
That they end up being spied upon.
It's a subspace telescope, isn't it?
Yeah.
I thought that they used it for... I think there was a point where... in Parallels, they revisit the Argus Array.
Do they?
And it and it's a particular plot point because they come back to it, and it's the first time Worf thinks that the Cardassians have kind of done some jibbery pokery, and then he mentions that in a parallel universe, and they kind of call him out on it. Like, what are you talking about? So the Argus Array certainly comes back in at least once.
Wow.
In parallels, I'm certain.
I was pretty sure there were references to it. I thought there was one in Deep Space Nine, but I might be thinking about Cardassians and assuming it is Deep Space Nine. I might be thinking of parallels, but yeah.
Okay. I'll certainly be looking for that Argus reference in the future episodes, because I just started Deep Space Nine over again. Once a year, I go through the series, and now when I had a job where I could sit down and listen to them, I went through them faster, but now I can't. So, but anyway, it stopped relaying its data 2 months ago, so the ship goes to investigate it, and while they're there, they encounter this water heater that's floating in space, hovering above the array. And now it looks like a water heater to me, doesn't it to you?
It does, yes. Yeah.
But obviously it's some kind of probe. So we need more information on this water heater. You know, what's the temperature of the water? How much water could it hold? Things of that nature.
Can we get it serviced?
Yes, yes. Are there parts for it? Because it looks like there was a pipe sticking out of the top.
Yeah, and those old water heaters, they can be buggers to get parts.
Yes.
Yeah, you definitely need a good plumber.
Yeah, absolutely, because, you know, if you do it wrong, you get water all over the house, and you don't want that, or all over the ship, I suppose. But they need more information. And instead of using that massive scanner they've got on board the ship, let's just go to a shuttle, because that always works great. So what do you think of the shuttle idea?
It's a sort of little bit of plot contrivance,
it's
I guess.
Fun. It's always fun to be on a shuttle. But we're going to do a shuttle. We're going to get a real close scan. And I can understand seeing Geordi, since he's a scientist on there. Oh, no, he's not. how about Barclay? Let's take Barclay along, too, because he's a scientist. Or no, he's not. but I do love this episode.
I guess you're right. They aren't as engineers and as good as engineers as they are, even though Geordi is a terrible boss. They're probably not the two best people to send.
Yeah. Well, you know, like you said, he's a terrible boss sometimes, but I noticed in this one he's not quite the dick he usually is.
Yeah.
I probably shouldn't have said
that. Geordi usually is a dick. No, he's sort of tolerable in this episode.
Yes, he is. But since Barclay is one of his top engineers, he wants to take him along for the ride.
Yeah, but he doesn't mention that explicitly, and from Barclay's perspective, I can imagine him just turning around saying, "What, now? I mean, after 3 years? I mean, now you've decided this?"
Yeah.
I mean, a little too late. I know it's really HR that I've put in pressure on you to be more inclusive, but I'm actually just waiting for my next transfer to come through.
Well, he was going to put in for a transfer, but no, Geordi talked him out of it. But anyway, so they hit the water heater with a certain scan, and all of a sudden there's a flash of light. Barclay gets knocked out. Cut to commercial. What do you think of the teasers?
Yeah, it's interesting enough. We've got a exotic alien probe. We've got a character we haven't seen too many times before. And there's a little bit of tension as something happens and Barclay collapses on the floor. So, yeah, it's pretty good.
This is Barclay's first time back, right? Unless I'm mistaken.
Yes, it is.
Yes, so it's his first episode since his first episode.
Yeah,
that could be.
Yeah.
And I think it's... I think that really what they're trying to do here, obviously it's a kind of it's a Barclay driven episode. I think they're just trying to make sure that everyone's kind of on board with this guy that, you know, clearly he's not a regular, and clearly the series doesn't have much history of bringing people back and having them as kind of, you know, constant side characters that you can dip into. I think the shuttle stuff, I mean, I think it's silly that they do take the shuttle in order to scan the thing very closely. But I think it's just a standard shtick just to get where we need to be, which is, you know, yeah. Barclay looking out the window as a big flash goes off.
And although Barclay, we haven't seen him, he was mentioned in Best of Both Worlds. His name is mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Commander Shelby says Barclay, Sherman, and somebody else, they're running through the testing sequence now or something like
that. Yeah.
Really? Because, I mean, Barclay didn't appear until after that, though. No, he did.
It was season 3, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the end of season 3. So it was probably only a couple of episodes before.
Hollow Pursuits, Most Toys. Yeah, probably not too far, but his name was mentioned. But it's the first time we've actually seen him. But it was nice that that reference was in there, if you go back and rewatch it.
Unless it was Timothy Barclay that they mentioned.
But I think he was off ship at that point, though, wasn't he? Hadn't he not been transferred back to the Intrepid?
Who's Timothy Barclay?
Yeah, he's made him up.
I mean, Shelby could have been talking about Timothy Barclay for all we know, but you're right. It seemed like, obviously...
Isn't there a kid at some point, an annoying actor, child actor called Timothy? Is that hero worship, or am I thinking of something completely different?
Is it hero worship is Timothy?
Is it? I'm probably thinking of Timothy. That's a crap episode.
So you want me to put you on for
it? I knew I had the name Timothy in my head. Yeah, I'll come on for that one. Why not? When is that?
Right. So anyway, okay. So let's go ahead and go back, because we're now past the teaser. We return to the show to find that they try to take the probe into custody. But before they can do that, it starts moving toward the ship. Now, here's the thing. Okay. Let me go back to when this was actually put out. 1991. So we're talking 25 years ago. Okay? So I'm not going to say spoiler alert. We know this probe was sent by an alien to guide others to their realm, right? What exactly was this probe expecting to do at the Argus Array?
It was
supposed to reprogram it, right?
I guess so. It was probably going to reprogram it so it could broadcast a stronger signal, I would guess. Maybe? It's a powerful transmitting/observing device with a lot of power behind it, so I'm guessing it was probably scanning it to see if it could use its technology to further its mission, I guess.
So it wasn't necessarily trying to get the array to open up a singularity so the array can go to their realm. Maybe
No, I think it was probably trying to just see if it could use it to get in touch with an alien species.
I never
quite thought about why it was there.
Or it was just there to hijack the array, take it offline, and force somebody to come try and fix it.
Possibly. Possibly.
Okay. Well, meanwhile, back in sick bay, Barclay looks completely different. In fact, here we go. He knows more about human cells than Dr. Crusher, which actually isn't saying very much considering what a terrible doctor she really is. But this is where I kind of like where the episode is going, because you shouldn't have to wait too long for the result. Why? Well, can't you just blah, 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 blah?
Yep. Technobabble.
Yeah, we're talking about human cells. A cell has an electromagnetic signature! Like, whoa. So, I like the word.
It's quite nice the way he sort of goes off on one and gets quite sort of animated about things. And, yeah, it's cool. You can immediately tell that something's up.
Yeah.
You can, but also if you notice that he's slipping into that role. He doesn't switch immediately.
No.
So he's still apprehensive about approaching Crusher. He's still kind of he thinks he knows what can be done, but he's hesitant to mention it, and then is not able to control it in the way that he does later when he is speaking to Picard and Troy.
And he becomes super confident and super awesome. Yeah. Yeah, you know, he does switch into it in a sort of graduated way, which is quite nice.
Okay.
And by the way, and the whole point of this as well is that, you know, we know the episode, we've watched it many times, we can see this happening, but I think from the audience's perspective, they do not necessarily have to pick up that this guy's being changed. And then he will then start suggesting other bits and pieces, becoming more helpful as time goes on. And it's I don't know when you're expected to notice that there's been a significant change. Probably when, you know, when he starts talking about it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, right. Because we only saw him one time. He was just a shy introvert. And who knows, in the months since, he's become stronger and more confident. And he seems different in the beginning. He just seems different all the way from the beginning. And it just gets better.
He deleted all of those holodeck programs other than whichever number it was that he didn't delete.
Number 2, number 4, or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know what that was. just a second. So, anyway, but yeah, I could see where he is a different person. He's probably had counseling all those months. He gets help, and so it really isn't until the Einstein thing that we realize something's really, just like Jordy says, you know, something's changed. We got to figure this out. But he begins to exhibit more and more smarts than anyone else on the ship, basically. And what my problem here is, it's not necessarily with the episode, it's with the act or the characters. What's the problem? He's becoming smarter and smarter, and that seems to terrify people.
I think it's just because it's different behavior. It's unanticipated behavior from him. It's fine with him being smarter and smarter, but he's just behaving out of character. And it happens very, very quickly. It's not like, you know, it could happen over months if someone realized they had a, you know, if someone like Barclay realized they had a social problem or whatever and they worked on it over months and months and months and improved steadily, you could sort of accept that. But the fact that it happens overnight, as it were, has people concerned, because people don't generally change that quickly. A leopard doesn't change its spots. Maybe it does, but not over that sort of short period of time. So I guess that's why they're apprehensive.
Hmm. But by the way, I thought that they were quite relaxed with him, to be honest. Because, I mean, it is brought up that he has changed, and then I think it's Picard that mentions about, well, we're going to lock him up for being, you know, too helpful. How is he a threat? And then I think Geordi then volunteers that, well, you know, he might have been taken over by an alien or something might have happened to him. So you can't necessarily exclude the fact that it's a you know, malevolent force at work. I actually thought they did a quite good job here. I mean, it wasn't like when No Man Has Gone Before, where they just give the computer guide to the dude in sick bay as he's changing into he's clearly changing into a super powerful being with contempt for humanity. So overall, I thought they did okay with this. I mean, things do move very fast, but I wasn't too bothered that they effectively lost control to the ship to a superpower.
Well, his IQ does go up to, what did he say, something between 1,200 and 1,400 or something. I mean, that's a staggering IQ.
I do love that statement, because he's sitting there and basically Crusher asks a rhetorical question and he just sits there and he answers it, and he doesn't really give any indication that you know, he's not interacting with anyone around him. It's just like, yeah, probably between 1,200 and 1,450. And he gives no reaction beyond that.
Give or take a little bit here or there.
I mean, an IQ of that is, it's beyond human comprehension.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so as the probe gets closer and closer, they're more in danger. Was it the radiation this thing was putting out or something?
Yeah, I think it's radiation. It's whatever drives the plot forward. I think it was radiation.
So they try to outrun it at warp 2, and the thing, that water heater, keeps up. with them. So, well, they can't fire photon torpedoes because they're just too close. You know, it would cripple them. You know, explosion that close would cripple them. So what do? The solution? Fire phasers. So my question is what do they expect the phasers would do? Stun it?
I didn't think you were able to fire phasers.
No, they fired phasers. They just couldn't fire photon torpedoes because an explosion at this close would cripple it.
But am I right in thinking... Yeah, I get that. But am I right in thinking that you can't fire phasers at warp? Because...
Depends on when you need it or not. But yeah, they tried firing phasers and it didn't... Obviously, it didn't do anything. But my point is what if it had? I mean... If they fired phasers, unless it was just to stun it, it would have exploded.
I think it's
not the explosion of the probe, it's the explosion of the photon torpedoes themselves. So if they just managed to destroy it with phasers, the shields would hold up against the debris from the probe, but photon torpedoes are so powerful that they themselves would destroy the ship, because if they detonated too close, I think.
Okay.
Is that right?
No, I agree. I mean, that's what I took away from it. But the obvious question here is that, Geordi, can you quickly make a small photon torpedo? Kind of comes
good.
Up, right?
Well, low yield.
Yeah.
I'm surely they can program it to say, just give it 10% power, that's fine. I'm sure they can do that.
Oh. It's like when people talk about like nuclear bombs, right? You know, there are nuclear bombs and then there's bigger nuclear bombs.
Yeah, there's megatons and there's kilotons and megatons and whatever. Yeah.
All right, so what do we do now? Well, the solution is, first thing you got to do is lock Geordi out of the computer. He's useless at this point. And do a work around him to make the shield stronger than ever before. And then you can fire photon torpedoes, maximum yield, full spread. Which I think is another way of saying five of them or something. It works. The ship rocks a little bit, but the water heater explodes and everyone is okay. Thank you, Mr. Barclay. You're welcome, Captain. Barclay out.
But by the way, I think there are a couple of things I have to say here. The scene of Barclay kind of like saving the day, I think it's absolutely fantastic. I absolutely love it. I also love the aesthetic of how he gets placed in the holodeck, although I think we're going to come on to that in a second. I think that the line that Barclay has is probably my favorite in all of Star Trek, when he says, "Okay, you know, can we get interface using a neural scan interface?" And the computer goes, "Well, we don't know how to build that." And he goes, "No problem. Here's how you build it.
Yes, I love that. We will come up to that a little later, but I love that scene too. It's great.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Well, like I said in the past episodes, you know, I mean, it's fun when you hear him, computer, build as follows, workstation chair. I mean, that chair appears just a millisecond after he, you know, before he plops his ass on the ground. He
sits down. I want an iconic display for the left hand and an alphanumeric for the right hand and, you know, plug it in using neural scan interface. There is no such device on record. Fine. This is how you do it.
But here's a question now. Awesome. Now there is such a device on record.
Yeah. Well, I'll come on to that as part of my review. As one of my final thoughts on all of this. He does all of these cool things like increase the shields by 300% or whatever he does. Yes. Isn't there a record of how he actually did that? And they could go, that's cool. We can increase shield efficiency by 300%, or we can travel to the center of the galaxy in seconds using this technology. Surely the computer had a record of what he did to achieve that.
Right.
It's fine. Yeah. It's fine.
Okay.
I overlook it because it's Star Trek.
Well,
because
if they have such gadgets and technology, then it wouldn't be as fun trying to get out of situations like they get in.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Alright, so the solution was to push Geordi out of the way, technically speaking. Not literally, but you know, push him out of the way and do it himself. But Geordi is very, Barclay is very happy with himself, while Geordi is just getting closer to wanting to punch him in the face. But now, it's time to repair the telescope. Okay? We all clear on that? Time to repair the telescope? Because it would be an incalculable loss. I believe you said it. Why not just build another one? Anyway, so...
Well, that thing's expensive.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they can come up with some replicated parts.
No, that thing's huge. That's expensive. They have to repair it. Hmm. I know there's no money in the future, which is just nonsense. But something like that takes time and effort and resources to build. It's expensive. Hmm. You need to repair it, not just say, oh, well, we'll just build another one.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, but first, before we go on to repair, we got to find out how Barclay did that. How did he enhance the shields like that? Well, it's pretty obvious. You first, you know, run hotter water through the pipe. If it's the inherent Poisson electrical interference from the warm, I don't know, something like that.
Something from a subspace attenuator and blah-de-blah-de-blah. Yeah, he comes up with a real techno-babble answer, and he's... Is that when he's talking to Riker, and Riker's like, yeah, okay, I see that. Uh-huh. I see that. Yeah,
that makes
yeah.
perfect sense. Anyway, but like I said, do you think Geordi kept the solution for future shield problems? No.
No.
Voyager certainly could have used an errant amplification of the piezoelectric piano or something like that. Okay, so how are we doing so far? Are we still liking the episode?
Yes.
Okay.
I enjoy it.
Well, the only way they can think of repairing the telescope is each reactor one by one. Which would take 2 to 3 weeks at least. But no. No. Smarty boy Barclay comes up with a plan to repair them all simultaneously and within 2 days instead of one by one. Pudwack. I'm sorry, that's what Barclay was thinking about, Geordi. That, you know, that is if Geordi could assist him in the morning. Hey, guys, jump in anytime you want to say something.
Lou, whenever you say that, we always stand back.
Oh, boy. I'm sitting. But anyway, before they can even get to the repair, though... They've got one more thing to do. Make Beverly cry.
Oh, yeah, that's a really nice scene, actually. I really enjoy that. So his performance from earlier, which was incredibly awkward, and he just pulls out this really lovely speech and the look in her eyes. I really enjoy that, actually. I like that scene. His acting is... Oh, it's not Oscar winning, but compared to what he was before, is a nice jump for Barclay, and I'm quite happy for him actually in this episode.
The moon, yes, that'll be my home.
That will be my home,
my paradise, and I shall find all the souls that I love.
Socrates,
Galileo,
etc. Yeah,
Dr. Roberts.
No, but this makes me sad because it reinforces this idea that if I was slightly more articulate, then I would be able to get hold of the ladies. Oh. And, you know, all of these socially awkward people watching Trek are sitting here thinking, oh, I need to be better in order to get the ladies. If they really should be teaching us that actually Barclay is no better placed in this kind of super hyper state of his than
I don't know about that. Did you notice when they had the meeting the next morning, Barclay was late for the meeting, one of the women around the table says, well, I stopped by his quarters, but he wasn't there. I don't think women have ever stopped by Barclay's quarters before.
Oh, you might be right. Yeah.
So I think he's changed. He's more suave and deboner. I mean, debonair. Deboner.
Deep-o.
Suave and deboner. but he did miss the meeting again. He's, you know, what do you think Geordi's probably thinking? That bastard returned to his old self, overslept something.
Yeah, I think that's probably what they thought. Yeah, he was on the holodeck watching porn.
G of J of sub I as over T as T approaches infinity.
Yeah. So this was the scene, James, I wanted to ask you about. Obviously, the mathematics.
What?
Did any of the mathematics on that board, as far as you were, did it make any sense at all, or is it all nonsense?
No, it's fine. They're putting up, as far as I can tell, they're just putting up generic tensor calculus stuff.
Okay.
Which is what you need for general relativity.
Okay. So it's not nonsense then.
No, and they have a couple of, differential operators and stuff. But the thing is that one of the things people will always say, and you often see, whether it's in this episode or whether it's in the original Day the Earth Stood Still, there's a big board of a whole load of mathematics.
Yeah.
And the idea is that you should be able to understand the mathematics or the physics being worked out of context. And that's very often not possible, right? Unless you actually have diagrams and stuff. You know, the mathematics is—it's just a language in which they have stated their problem and then are trying to step through a logical, logical series of operations in order to reach some kind of goal. So, to me, it seemed legitimate. It didn't. I don't think any of it flew from one to the other. So, I don't think they were working out equations. I think they were just stating a whole load of governing equations or certain constraints.
So basically, they're two maths nerds jamming.
Yeah, pretty much is what it seemed like.
Yeah,
I don't know. I had actually heard that on the Big Bang Theory, those boards, whiteboards they have, are actual real equations.
All equations
well,
are real.
You know, not just gibberish.
But what do you do? Yeah. So what you do, you make a statement of a very well-known or famous equation. So whether it's like E equals MC squared, or you put down Schrodinger's equation or something like that, and people will look at it and they go, I'm clever enough to have noticed that this is a significant equation in life, and then you make yourself feel better. But if E equals MC squared wasn't E equals MC squared, but, A equals BW, and they just happen to have defined things differently, it's the same equation.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then... tell me if this is right then, Doc. AH minus HA equals IH parentheses DA stroke DT back parentheses. Is that correct?
This is just...
It depends on the problem you're trying to express.
I'm frustrating him. I hear it already.
No, the mathematics transcends the problem. Yeah. I think is what James is trying to say. That is absolutely correct, depending on the problem you're... That is a perfect equation, depending on the problem you're trying to solve.
It's a bit like saying the kid's called Stephen, right? Yeah, sure. I mean, he's allowed to be called Stephen. You're allowed to spell it the way you spell it, but it doesn't define anything more... it doesn't define anything more than what you've just decided to label things as. Now, of course, you can write down equations that are kind of not self-consistent with each other. So if you actually had, a contradictory statement within an equation, then you might... See, can you put a contradictory equation in this thing? You might be able to. I'm just thinking. There are things that you can do wrong, but there's very little that you can do that is kind of right without the context in which you're defining the problem.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to stop there because I think that was a reasonable place to stop.
Okay. Well, I did notice, Mark, that you and I both were going to ask James to verify the calculations on the board. That's fascinating because I got it in my notes too.
Yeah, I just wondered if it made any sense at all. But it's nice that it's not complete nonsense. I like that.
Okay. All right. So basically, like I said, Geordi is realizing that Barclay is so much better than he is, and it just stinks that they're walking down a corridor in a hallway, and someone's arguing with you about why you've become more confident in what you're doing. I feel good. Do I have to ask why? Yeah, we do. So he orders him to sickbay, where Beverly tries to find what the probe has lit up in Barclay's brain. Because he's now much smarter than anyone else on board. And I think it would make him a great asset to have. But no, everybody's in so much fear about what he's going to do. I'm just glad Picard has the final say in allowing him to continue working. I'm all alone here.
You're not all alone. You're not all alone. I actually have found lots of them. I found a full list of the equations that they had on the board. I'm just having a look through some of them.
Oh, you're just looking at it.
Okay.
Yeah. Were you able to Google that?
Actually, I managed to Google it. Yeah, it's. Cool. Actually, I think they. I can't quite see, but the fact that they've got. I think they're defining. I lose the first definition, but it looks like they're defining the potential. So the second derivative with respect. Well, not a potential. They're defining some kinetic energy of a particle because they've got Planck's constant in there. And then I think underneath that, they're defining the change in the Hamiltonian to be the input on the energy side. So I think they're actually fundamentally working with Schrödinger's equation now. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. And then over there, there's certainly some general relativity because they've got the 8 pi k times some kind of tensor representation of the solution.
Uh-huh, yeah, I see that.
Oh, they've even written it as tensor as well. Yeah, it's something all there. Sorry,
it's Luke, nice. It's nice that there's something in there that just isn't nonsense. It's a nice touch.
Uh-huh, yeah, I see that. That's my best Riker imitation. Uh-huh, yeah, I see that. Alright.
Do you think that when Barclay started becoming more confident and then Geordi started to pull him up on it, do you think Barclay should have kind of said to him, you were in the holodeck the other day with Leah, and
shall we talk about Starfleet HR again?
Yeah.
Listen, you know, I'm going to be running this place in 2 weeks' time, LaForge, and you're going to be lucky even to have a job.
I think it'd have been funny if Barclay walked ahead and said, "I can't believe you're the chief engineer."
Just, I know, I listened to you guys discuss that. How on earth does Geordi still have a job after he did that? She should have gone straight to staff the HR and reported him. I mean, if you did that in the workplace, you would be out on your ear in minutes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, that is funny. Okay, so anyway, they all finding out that Barclay's brain is lighting up like a Christmas tree. Which, by the way, hey guys, Merry Christmas, everyone. But now it's time to fix the array because it's going critical and there's nothing that can be done. And we've already discussed it's cost too much to rebuild another one. So Barclay figures he's got to come up with a solution, but I can't get anything done around here. So he runs out of engineering and runs to the holodeck and sits down in the chair that arrives just a millisecond before his ass hits the ground. And he comes up with the solution to save the array. It's a faster interface, one that's pretty much as fast as his brain if they could come up with a machine to do what, you know, could keep up with his brain. And Holodeck 3, by the way, he doesn't hook up to a computer, he actually becomes the computer.
Yeah, so his mind sort of somehow moves into the computer. It's a fun scene, though. I really do enjoy that. I'd really love to be able to walk into a holodeck and just say, give me this, give me that. And like you say, you can sit down just before your ass hits the chair, and it's cool. It's good fun.
You know what?
Now, the only problem I have is that, you know, he's obviously not very forward-looking because within the next hour or so, he is entirely within that chair, within this holodeck, and he can't be moved unless he's going to kill himself.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope that he made the chair have an integral like waste disposal unit.
Otherwise,
after the third day, really, you're going to be shutting down the main computer because he stinks.
I don't think so. You know, I don't think so. I think in the future, I think in the 24th century, There's not going to be catheters and bedpans.
You think they can just beam the poo.
Beam it all out. Bum. Yes. Obviously.
But how do they get food into it?
No.
Maybe they could beam the food into your stomach.
Beam food in, you could do that. Or, you know, obviously the...
Beam food in, leave it 24 hours, beam it out.
Maybe they have to have a peg tube. But the rest of it, on the other hand... Now, Mark, when you were doing the introductions and you did the guest stars, I was coughing, so I had to mute. Did you describe Imagil Barrett as a voice of the computer, at least for a while?
I did.
Oh, yes. Good. I don't know if I missed that part, because that's exactly what happens. He becomes the voice of the computer. And did you notice he refused to respond when Wrecker called for him? Barclay! Barclay! And then Picard says, computer, acknowledge. Respond. I am responding, sir. Just not to him.
I am responding, but it's just...
Not to him.
No. Because he's not... He isn't Barclay anymore, is he?
No, he's a computer.
He's the computer.
All right. So you...
Now, I really like this kind of diversion that we take, because we've kind of had like a fun story about trying to solve the problem, and then very quickly we're seeing Barclay kind of grow, and it now takes on like a 2001 kind of edge to it, as there's this sinister computer that thinks knows what to do better than the people that are actually in charge.
That's and
like I enjoy this part, especially where the Barclay's interaction with Picard, when it's like, oh, no, if you can only, let me do this for you, I'm certain you're going to be happy. And it's a nice kind of I actually enjoy watching Barclay become kind of the infinitely intelligent character. It much better than like things like Gary Mitchell, where I always find that they turn too evil too quickly, or they walk away from their humanity very quickly. You can clearly see here that Barclay he's become very clever. He's become very able to do stuff. But he is certainly at this stage, he's still respecting the chain of command to a certain extent, and still wishing to please.
Yeah, he's still human for all intents and purposes. But I see what you mean about, Where No Man Has Gone Before, I love that episode. I think that's a great episode. I really, really enjoy it. But you're right, it becomes evil within minutes. It becomes... It's very quick.
It's more crude in the way they put the story across.
But I still love the episode. But
It's almost as if the one thing that's prevented me being evil is the fact that I wouldn't be able to get away with it, and I wouldn't have power to do it. I mean, realistically, that's not true. Well, I hope it's not true for most people.
No, it's not. It's like I don't go out and rape and kill and murder people because I don't think because I could get away with it. It's because I don't do it because I think that's the wrong thing to do. If I thought I could get away with it, would I go out and do it? No, I wouldn't. So it's that sort of, not paradox, but that sort of thought.
But what if it didn't work? I mean, what if he couldn't save the array? It explodes anyway, and now he's stuck on the holodeck. He had no exit strategy.
Well, nothing ventured, nothing gained.
Yeah. I mean, would they have just left him there? Does he get more holodeck rations or more replicator rations because he does more work than anybody else on board?
So you think from now on, anyone using holodeck 3 has to share with Barclay in the corner?
Geordi's going to hate that.
Well, he'd actually see everything anyway because he is the computer and the computer runs the holodeck, so... He could be in any holodeck, and he's there watching and creating things for people.
Right. So he's already seen everybody's holodeck program. He's already read them all. So he knows what Geordi does.
Yep. Starfleet HR on speed.
Right. Yeah. You think I'm bad, you should see what he does. Okay. Anyway. Or Riker, by the way. Or... He now knows the name of the guy who has to clean up the holodeck. So, one thing I noticed that they did better with, it's something I've kind of always had a pet peeve. You know when you hear internal monologues or you hear Luoxana Troy's telepathic talk with Deanna, but yet their face doesn't match any of the dialogue, because obviously they put that stuff in later, and all they're doing is just looking at each other and think.
But hang on. I always thought the Troys did well.
I thought they did okay.
Yeah, I think that Buffy does very well as well.
Their head gestures towards each other. I thought they were okay.
Yeah, the head gestures. But I mean, like, if somebody's grunting because they're in pain in their monologue, or their internal voice is in pain, but yet their eyes are perfectly clear, I always hated that. That's been a pet peeve of mine. But on this one, he does a lot better. I mean, he does actually look like he's, you know, making these faces at the time he's actually thinking these thoughts that you would.
It's never distracted me, so I haven't quite thought about it, but it never distracted me. So he obviously did a good job. I've obviously never thought, well, his face doesn't match what he's saying. So,
All right. Well, anyway, either way, conference time, and we need to shut off all the audio and video pickups so the computer doesn't monitor us, because they have to have a super secret meeting on how to stop Barclay. How are we going to stop him? Well, you know.
But it's good that they at least acknowledge that that's an issue, right? They could have been very... It could have been very easy for them to have just gone into the other room and started talking openly without the writer realizing that the computer probably hears that.
Yeah.
So I think it's but nice
remember, that they acknowledge it. Remember, James, they tried that in 2001 A Space Odyssey, and Hal was lip-reading through the shuttle, through the pod bay... through the little pod thing imaging. Wow, that's funny.
Okay. And, you know, whatever they were doing to bypass control of the bridge, I think it would have worked if one thing hadn't happened. If Deanna had just kept her ass on the bridge instead of actually going down there to piss him off even further. Because that's what I think he... You could tell when they will do whatever they have to do to stop you. And she turns around and walks out, and everything he's doing is now intensified. So I think they would have actually got it had she not went over there to try and talk him down. Do you guys agree?
I think that Barclay was too clever to be distracted by Troy popping down and kind of like stroking his ego. And other things in the holodeck. So I think that, in my mind, that's where the Troy kind of diversion was coming from. And I think that there are a couple of things that he mentions about being kind of more further ahead and being able to comprehend things that she just doesn't understand. That made me think that he was clearly in a different place. And I think that it showed the hand of the main cast as to how they were going to kind of get out of this one. And as a result, gave a heads up to Barclay.
But what I'm saying is that I don't think he had any idea they were trying to circumvent him until she walked in and actually let him know they're going to do whatever they have to do to stop you, which made him intensify his processing power to find out what they were doing.
No, sure, and I agree with that. I don't necessarily think it's only the final line where Troy basically turns around and wags her fist at him and said, "We're gonna get you." But I even think that the act of Troy being there, I think he was able to see through that as a distraction, and most likely a distraction in order to keep him not looking at something he probably should be looking at if he wishes to keep control of the ship.
What if she started removing her clothing? Would that have slowed his processor power down?
I believe that is what happens, yes.
I'm taking over the world. Oh, what are you doing, lady? Okay.
Well, you do know the famous quote about that God gave man, both a brain and a something downstairs, but only enough blood to run one of them at the same time.
Yes.
Right.
There's only so much blood to go around, isn't
there? Yes, that is true. Okay, well, anyway, it doesn't work because, Geordi's access to the bridge has been cut off again. But now we have this thing building up outside, and they're going to get caught in it. I love the effects of the ship and the people that are caught in the quantum level oscillation delay, which I always thought that meant their voices sound like they're talking into a fan.
Yeah, I can see that.
But anyway, I did like, you know, it's kind of cool. It reminded me of the motion picture, in a sense.
The wormhole thing, which makes no sense in the motion picture.
But I love that wormhole. That's one thing I absolutely liked about the motion picture, was that oscillation.
Just the worst thing about the film.
Oh, no. Everything was like...
No, it makes no sense at all. And then there's an asteroid in it.
Yeah, right.
How did that asteroid end up in the wormhole and they blow it up and it makes no sense?
But did the asteroid cause it? Is it like caused by the asteroid?
Yes, it was caused. A wormhole was caused by an asteroid, yes.
Yeah, that sounds preposterous. But
it's
then
absolutely
why
nonsense. Yeah, I hate that bit of the movie.
Why did it disappear when they shoot the asteroid?
Because the asteroid was generating a wormhole field.
Of course it can't.
It's a lump of bloody rock and iron floating through space.
I wasn't talking about the science. I was talking about the special effects.
It really winds me up. Apparently, the special effects were done by hand. So it's not a computer-generated kind of shift thing that you're seeing there. It's not like a post-processing wizard that you can just click on. It's being done, you know, with optical effects by hand. Every scene of it.
I hate that bit in the motion picture. That James is awful. It makes no sense whatsoever. It's completely
wrong. Okay. But they do end up in a very interesting part of space with a very interestingly happy alien. He's a Cytherian. And
yes, the man with the big sort of diamond in the middle of his head.
Yes, yes. So let's talk about what each thing he was referring to. A motive, that's when he says that when Worf moves. So it's obviously a motive about his ability to move. A motive? Or what?
Oh, I didn't notice him saying that. I know he says interrogative.
Emotive? Yeah, first thing he says is a motive.
Yeah, but isn't emotive, as in with an E rather than an A?
Probably
emotive.
E. Yeah.
Okay, all right. Electrochemical stimulus response. Cranial plate, bipedal locomotion,
skull, two legs,
endoskeletal contiguous external integument. What the hell's that?
I think that was Data.
Yes, probably is Data.
Either
that or it sounds...
it's just nonsense.
Okay.
But then again, one thing I don't like about the Universal Translator is that we have a lot of words to describe, certainly English does, by the way, have a lot of words to describe very common things. So, you know, your skin can be described in different ways, and it can be described in fairly scientific ways. And whenever you have an alien talking to you, it always seems to go towards the colloquial words that are in common use. And for this dude... he's probably just saying, you know, when he says skull, and they say, oh, cranial. But why is the Universal Translator choosing to make this guy sound like he's swallowed a thesaurus?
Yeah. Maybe the Universal Translator, maybe the Cytherians have a very complex and descriptive language, and it's translating that into complex and descriptive English.
So,
or maybe it's just because it makes him sound cool.
So, in the next episode of the Cytherian was there when Vash walks in 10 forward, he would have described Riker as a penile stimulus response.
Not possible.
What?
Oh, you guys, is it Cupid up?
Yes, it is.
Is that the
Cupid,
next
yeah.
Oh God, good luck with that.
I'm not looking forward to it. I don't know about him.
It is. It's
what they did to
crap.
John DeLancey next week. We'll talk about it. That poor man.
Sorry, I'll let you discuss it. That's Cupid is an awful episode.
Yeah, definitely.
It's not that bad.
You're very much an apologist, James. It's
like you said.
I'm not an apologist for Star Trek, but Cupid is awful.
No, so I was watching it earlier today, actually, and Every now and again, I like to note when things change in an episode. So one thing I actually noticed about this episode was that the vast majority of the story, when I look back on it, I assume that this is a story when Barclay becomes very clever and then they go off and they find this new alien race. But the truth of the matter is that it's mainly about Barclay. You're 40 minutes of the way through, or maybe 35 minutes of the way through, before there's even any indication that there's been, that they're going to go and communicate with the aliens and stuff like that. So the big kind of event that occurs, the big iconic image from this episode, other than Barclay sitting in a chair, is this big floating head. And we don't see that until the very, very final scene. Now, the big iconic image with Cupid, of course, is, you know, it's the Robin Hood stuff. That doesn't start until, like, well over, it's over half of the way through the episode. Yeah. You see anything to do with Robin Hood. And I was watching it and I was thinking, this seems to be different than I remember. And then just out of left field, it's like, hey, should we go down and play some Robin Hood? Let's go. Yeah. Just out of nowhere. I mean, the side left turn to get Q into the episode is bad enough, but the Robin Hood one was very, very surprising.
Well, it's a good episode. Yeah.
Good luck. I guess you're recording that next, aren't
you? Yeah, we are recording that next.
Yeah. I only have 10 points on that episode, so...
Nine of them, this is
great. Pretty much. I remember that one episode. I don't remember what it was. I could probably look back at my scores and tell which one it was. But there was one episode that all I could say was I was just bored.
Yeah, that was Home Soil.
Home Soil. I remember that. No, I actually like Home Soil. I think that's a good episode. Right. I think you were very harsh on Home Soil.
Oh.
It's one of the better episodes in Season 1. And I know they're quite few and far between in Season 1. But I actually enjoyed Home Soil. Just for the concept, if nothing else, I'm always one to say, okay, I like where they were trying to go. I like what they were trying to say. They may not have executed it very well, but I quite like the concept of the little creatures who were sort of wired through the salty water and acted like a computer. I thought that was an interesting idea. So I like it for that.
Yeah, all right.
Anyway.
Okay, so anyway, the last two things he says is hierarchical collective command structure and interrogative.
Interrogative. Yes, I am.
Yes. And if you don't tell me what I want, I'm going to blast a hole in your face. Oh, you've already got that. Never mind. Okay. Okay, so the ship spends 10 days with the Cytherians, and they bring back knowledge that will take their scholars decades to sift through. That is if they survive the Dominion War, you know.
But the big one of the problems with this episode is that you're encountering a species that is hugely advanced from a scientific perspective. You've managed to, you know, get great shields. You've managed to fold subspace in a way that's never been thought of before. And these things aren't kind of piece of technology that you've kind of borrowed and used and then have to give back. You know, Barclay explicitly mentioned them as ideas, yeah. Right? These are things that Barclay's able to do. It's an idea. And then once an idea has been thought of, it's very hard to put that genie back into the bottle.
Exactly.
But from this point onwards, you get the impression that the only thing really that the alien race gave them was, I don't know, maybe their, you know, collective works of Shakespeare or Mozart.
And their recipes for chicken soup. Yeah.
Ah. Indeed. And we're going to be, you know, we're going to be fascinated by looking at this, you know, this great sporting event that they've sold us a DVD for. And that's it. It doesn't seem like we're going to enhance our technology, which is obviously a problem that you have to overcome in these kind of episodes, because you can't just advance the human race 4,000 years on a bog standard episode of TNG. Yeah. But I don't think they do a very good job of pulling back.
Yeah. And I wonder if...
Yeah. That's the flaw with this episode is, as I said earlier, don't they have a record of how he improved the shields or folded subspace or did whatever he did? And like you say, James, it's not like they gave him a magic box and said, press this button and they'll bring you here, and then took the box away. It was like, oh, well, you've already got the technology. All you have to do is just press these buttons in this order and you can do it. And it would have been recorded. So that's the flaw. that's the flaw with this episode. But
okay, hopefully the Scytherians got some of Aunt Adele's cures, you know, recipes. Isn't it come up later that Aunt Adele?
The steamed milk with
cure for the common cold, and this is Aunt Adele's recipe for chicken noodle soup or something like that.
So whose aunt is this? Is this
yes, I think it was.
Picard.
Picard's?
One episode he gives her, she's having problems sleeping, and he gives her steamed milk with nutmeg.
Yeah.
And she thanks him, and he says, oh, thank Aunt Adele.
Yeah, that's it.
I've got no idea what episode it's in, but it'll come to me later.
Because it's something that when I touch something, it brought back memories that she's done it all before. It's one of those time loop repeating things.
Time loop things.
Yeah, the blow them up several time episode.
Well, cause and effect.
I think so, yeah.
Cause and effect. Yes, cause and effect. Yes, it is.
I think so.
I like that episode. That's
absolutely
episode.
Perfect.
What season is that in?
Five.
Next season, huh?
Five. Okay, can I sign myself up for that, please?
It's not free. Actually, Lou, sorry. Let me ask a question. Have we let the listeners know how they can get in touch with us to request episodes for next season? Did that go? I think that went out a couple of weeks ago.
You know what?
Is it on the website?
Now that I think about it, I forgot. I think I forgot to do that. I forgot to put it up. But since we've already been talking about it, yes, there have been several things that have come in. But no, it's not officially on the website. But since it went out, people have already started talking. So we'll see. I'll let you know when we get a
chance. Okay. Do that. I have to? I'll have a look through what's on season 5, and then I'll pick some episodes, and then threaten you with cancellation if you don't let me on. Eventually, you're going to call me. Eventually, you're going to call me up on that and say. Yeah.
Okay.
Go on then, and I'll be like, okay,
yeah, we'll see.
Because I actually really enjoyed
it. Now, I'm not sure if anybody took that or not, but we'll see. Okay, so let's see where we were at. 10 days with the Scytherians, and now they have back knowledge that will take forever. Life is back to normal, and it's now time for his date with Deanna to the Arboretum. So do you really think that Barclay can just shut it all off, and now he doesn't have a clue how he did any of those things he did before?
I think that's a good question, and I also think a question they don't touch at all is that what is the psychological ramifications of a dude going from where he wants to be to being now like a gibbering fool? I mean, this guy might be severely depressed for the rest of his life and feel like he just doesn't fit in. And everyone kind of... One thing I was actually almost expecting, because everyone kind of like reacts to Barclay as if, oh, now we've got our old Barclay back to normal, isn't everything great? But Barclay himself has been, you know, has been improved, and then he has been reset in this episode somewhat. I know that there's a thing about chess right at the end where it suggests he might not quite have been reset. But the fact that they used Barclay as the vessel to make this journey made me question whether or not it was going to be ultimately an unhappy end for that character. I could easily see them bringing back Barclay, who was popular, putting him in this prominent role, and effectively having him sacrificed during this episode so that you don't have, well, you don't have either the consequence of A, a neutered individual hanging around, or B, a super intelligent human that can sort out all of the problems hanging around. And in a way, neither of those two are desirable for the long-term storytelling of the show. But they choose to neuter him and hope that next week we won't notice that he's not here anymore.
Uh-huh.
And he's not going to be back into what, Realm of Fear? Something like that?
I'm not sure. But another thing we went past was how Barclay taught violin at the violin school last night. And I didn't know Barclay played the violin. He didn't. Not until last night.
You see, I think that's unlikely, isn't it? I mean, you show all of these things where he's supposed to be advancing very, very quickly, and he becomes very, you know, much more creative, much more intelligent, almost a superhuman. And yeah, I think this is just a just another example of, you know, him being able to do things that other people can't.
Yeah, right. Okay, so I guess that brings us to the end of this one, right?
I think so, unless Mark has anything to add.
Marcus? Marky? On your mark! He's gone. Did he leave us?
I think he's cancelled the show.
Hey, let me see if I can get on to the WordPress blog.
He'd been locked down already.
Oh, there he is. I heard a giggle.
No. I'm sorry. I just had to step away from the microphone very, very briefly there. Were you asking me a question?
Well, is there anything you need to bring up for the episode, or are we done?
No, I think we're done.
Okay. Sounds good to me. Okay, so it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Mark, why don't you start us off as a guest?
Sure. As I said at the beginning, I do really enjoy this episode, and it isn't without its problems, as I've said. If Barclay was able to achieve all of these things with the shields and the magic space folding or whatever he did with the existing technology without being given a magic box, how come they couldn't repeat that? Because the computer must have recorded it. I overlook that. James brings up a very, very good point about Barclay being sort of thrust up to greatness and then coming back down to a human level. That would probably destroy someone's mind. So that's an excellent point, which I hadn't actually thought of. But this is one of those episodes. It's, as I've said before, when I've been on episodes that I've really enjoyed, I have a go-to list of, I fancy watching a bit of Star Trek, and there are some episodes which I'll just go, I'll just stick that on because I know I enjoy it. It's a bit of fun. And this is one of those episodes for me. And as anyone knows who's listened to me on a podcast, if that makes it's my go-to list, it makes it a 5. There are different levels of 5. I gave First Contact the last episode I was on a 5. This is a very different 5, but I can put this episode on and be entertained and have a good time watching it. So it's 5 stars from me.
All right. Yes, I did call that one right. So, Doc?
I thought you might.
Doc, how about you?
Well, to be honest with you, I think I'm just going to say everything that Mark just said. There are not every 5-star episode is a perfect episode, and not every episode that is as much as it can be is a 5-star episode either. So, you know, it's not that you you start out at 5 and you take things away, or you start from 0 and you build things up. It's a little bit trickier than that. I've always enjoyed this episode. I've always loved this episode. I think there are issues around the Barclay character and what they do to him and how it all fits together. But this has some, you know, classic imagery, wonderful story. It's a relatively smallish episode in season 4, which I've been telling this a lot, right? It's, you know, they're not like huge episodes where huge things happen. But they just feel like the production staff and the writers and the actors and everyone's all, you know, firing on all cylinders, and they're just at their top game. And I think that's the thing that probably in my opinion, is the difference between season 4 and season 3. I think season 3 has probably, you know, a collection of better episodes, that standout episodes that I can think of. When we're thinking about The Defector and Yesterday's Enterprise and The Offspring and Best of Both Worlds. But the consistency in season four, whereby you can have your average episode hit extremely good highs, is something that I don't think they were ever able to sustain in season 3. I have nothing really that can take away from this episode, and I'm more than happy to give it 3 thumbs up and a full 5 stars.
3 thumbs up and a full 5 stars. Boy, did I get that one wrong.
Did you? What did he expect me to say?
I thought James was going to... I predicted a 5 or a... Yeah, I think I was predicting a 5 from James.
Well, I don't know. For
we expected 5.5.
No, I was expecting a 4 because I kind of sensed in your opening statements that you know, it's a great episode. It doesn't quite fit the bill of perfect, and you don't do halves, so you're going to go to a 4. That's kind of what I was thinking. But I'm wrong. Okay, that's cool. Yeah.
But then sometimes you can have the discussion and then actually say, you can, the discussion can bump it up or down, can't it? No, I think I was calling a 5 for James. Even before we started talking, I was thinking, this is the sort of episode that James would
like. Okay, alright.
Star Trek.
Okay.
It was very Star Trek-y, which, as James said on the last podcast I was on, is generally the best category of Star Trek episode.
By the way, I do have to say, I mean, I've mentioned this before, Lou, you really don't have a very good co-host on this show. When I have to describe things as, well, I really liked it because it was very Star Trek-y, that's the best I could do, I'm afraid.
Yeah, well, we'll see what next week shows me of my co-host on this show is. I'd love to see you make a ham sandwich out of that pig, but we'll see. Okay, so but we're still talking about the nth degree here, and I like this episode a lot. It does seem to fall back on what I call a tired cliche, is if somebody is smarter than you, then we need to put a stop to it quickly. But I do like the smarter than everyone else alive Barkley thing, even smarter than the computer Barkley thing. Personally, am I wrong that I would have liked to have had Dwight actually stay on the series as a regular, but not quite as the bumbling fool? Is there anyone else that would have liked that, or do we like the fact that he just comes back once in a while?
I do like him. And obviously he appears again in I know you said James Remlund Fear. I'm not sure if he's in any more episodes, is he? I can't remember. He appears in First Contact. He has a great appearance in First Contact where he really geeks out with Zefram Cochrane, which is great. I love that scene. It's fantastic. And obviously we see him again in Voyager. Yeah. Still socially very awkward, but he does a very, very important role in actually locating Voyager. So,
I think I'm going to be slightly blasphemous here. I think Barkley's better in Voyager than he is in TNG.
I think he is too. He matures a lot. He matures a lot. Yeah.
I have to say, I love episodes like Pathfinder.
They're great.
Absolutely fantastic.
And great episode.
Actually, Pathfinder is one of my... It's a real standout episode for Voyager for me, because I remember, you know, I when Voyager came on, I think, what would have been like... When was Voyager? Was it 95, 96 or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
So I remember being, you know, I was 15 at the time, and DS9 was going on, and the cool thing, of course, and by the way, we're splitting hairs here, the cool thing amongst the Star Trek-y nerds was to kind of hate on Voyager and think that the DS9 was where it was at. That's at least, you know, in the circles that I was walking in. And I remember really one of the, you know, there were good episodes in Voyager, and obviously things like Scorpion and stuff, they did the Big Bang stuff quite good with the Borg. But there was this point in Voyager where, at the end of Pathfinder, where they first make contact with the Alpha Quadrant after being away for, I think, 4.5 years or something like that at that point, where I remember explicitly feeling really, really sorry for the crew being lost. And then it just dawned on me, I actually must care about these characters if I'm willing to feel something about them only having just made contact. And, you know, there's the bit where Paris is talking to his dad, and that Barkley episode is just wonderful from start to finish in my mind.
But one thing I couldn't take on those two episodes, on both Barkley episodes that he was in, he's got to go against his own bosses. He's got to break into the laboratory. He's got to prove that he's right, because no one wants to listen to this guy. That bothers me for some reason.
So the problem with Barkley is unfortunately, they reset Barkley too often. So Barkley in Hollow Pursuits was a certain character who learnt a little bit, and then in this episode, he starts out... They show you him very, very nervous at the beginning, although he is, you know, he has come a long way, as Troy said, but they build him up, and they have to then reset him. And then when you start picking him up later on, you pick him up in Realm of fear, where he effectively is a hypochondriac. And again, it feels like the character's regressed by the time you're introduced to him. And I think the same thing is true on Pathfinder, whereby when you do speak to him, he's still a guy that is willing to kind of go to the holodeck in order to get away and not interact with people and, you know, try to stay away from his boss's sister who might be harassing him or whatever it happens to be. And I do think that there is this tendency that we love Barclay as being this kind of this every man that then overachieves. But after he's overachieved, then they have to pull him back down again for us to reconnect with him, or at least a lot of the writers seem to think that that's what needs to happen. And I think it is a valid criticism of the Barclay arc. It's not so much a single arc, but it's a lot of ups and downs in episodes and then slam him right back to the start point when you pick him up again 2 years down the line.
Okay. All right, well, we'll see. Anyway. But let's continue on. The alien of the week I read on Memory Alpha was supposed to be hostile, but turns out to be pretty darn harmless and, in fact, even kind of sweet. Just don't tell him that we destroyed his water heater, though, okay? Overall, it's a very good hour of Trek, minus the 15 minutes for commercials. Well, I don't know how it works over there, but we get a lot of commercials in our day.
When this was shown originally on BBC, we don't have commercials on the BBC, so it's a 45-minute episode.
Yeah, Luke, because we pay our TV license.
That's right, your TV license.
We pay a TV license.
which I
still pay for, despite the fact that I watch almost no television. But I own a television which is capable of receiving television signals, so I have to pay my TV license. But I haven't watched actual television in about 2 months.
I still don't know how the Bobbies over there are ever going to know that you have a TV in your house. I mean, it's not like they could.
It's not about that. It's about the principle here. Are you a kind of person that's not going to pay a TV license, Luke?
No.
I am a large consumer of other BBC content, such as the website, etc. So I pay it. But they used to have these things called detector vans, which I don't know if they actually did exist. You always imagined these sinister vans driving around the neighbourhood with a little satellite dish saying, "You've got a TV, and we don't have your."
Can you imagine them busting down your door because they detected a TV signal in there? Good Lord.
I don't know quite how that worked, but anyway.
All right. Well, anyway. So, and like I said, I take it on car rides, so it's not the absolute most perfect, but I still call this a 5. Yeah, I do. I still call it a 5.
I was thinking you were probably going to go, well, I was thinking a 4, but then when you said when it goes on rides with you, then it probably bumps it up, but I was thinking you were probably going to go for something more like a 4.5.
I love this episode. No, it's fine.
It's a good fun episode. But actually, I think I want to go and watch Pathfinder now. So when you guys record the next episode, I think I might go and watch Pathfinder because that's a fantastic episode.
We'll get there eventually, won't we? Say about the year 2022, we'll probably be going into Pathfinder.
And you've got to throw Discovery into the mix there as well, because obviously that starts in 6 months' time. Yes, there's been no thoughts yet on the network about a Discovery podcast, but that's going to be a unique podcast. All the podcast networks out there, we're going to be able to review a Star Trek series in real time, podcast wise.
Here's an idea, Mark. What about if you, I don't know if Doc's going to like me saying this, but what about if you require all your podcasters to do their own review of each episode of Pathfinder?
You mean like have an ensemble? Discovery,
yeah. No, not together. Not together. They do their own. Or...
I haven't even...
I don't know. How could it be an ensemble? I mean, everybody's got such varied schedules.
No, I just meant... okay, so episode 1, the Battle Bridge guys do it. Episode 2, the 10 Forward guys do it. Episode 3, it's UP2, etc.
That's a good idea.
But I don't know. I haven't even thought about it because... I've got other things on my mind. But yeah, it's at some point we'll have to do something about a Discovery podcast, I guess. But it's going to be exciting because new Star Trek.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Assign each one, or put out the list and see who wants it. But are we gonna, are they gonna review it right after, or are we gonna build up a few episodes? Or hey, did you guys watch last night's show? Okay, here's our review, because some people may not have caught it.
Well, it'll be on Netflix, so at least for us, anyway. I know you guys in the US have got to pay for CBS streaming.
I didn't have Netflix.
Well, then you buy Netflix. You pay the £7 a month or £7.50 a month for Netflix. Yeah. To get new Star Trek, James.
Yes.
I suppose so.
Okay.
I suppose. You know you're going to do it, so don't even pretend that you're not going to pay £7.50 a month for Netflix just to watch new Star Trek.
No kidding. Yeah. Right. Yes, he is. Don't worry, he is. Okay. It's Mark, so thank you for coming on. Let's see. Like I said, we have you again coming up very shortly here for Half a Life.
We do, yes. A interesting episode.
Yeah, 2 weeks, actually. So we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Awesome. I shall look forward to
it. Or whenever we record. Not sure about that yet. I tell you, this job has got me so screwed up. I say it every episode. I'm sorry about what I've done to our scheduling, but I'm trying my best to keep up. It just so screwed me up. So, all right, James, I'll talk to you in about 7 minutes. Everyone else, we'll talk to you next week.
The Evil Q returns.
I have a debt to repay.
He's turning Picard into the Prince of Thieves.
You're Robin Hood.
And forcing him to play a real-life game of survival.
This is not a mission. It's personal.
You should have left while you had the chance.
It appears there's going to be a double execution.
Medieval Trap next time on Star Trek The Next Generation.
So join us next time as we review episode number 20, Cupid. Poor Q, what they do to him. And we're going to have Carnivore J, otherwise known as Chris. So everyone, take care and good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody. Well, and Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
Oh, it is Christmas. Merry Christmas.
Yes, Merry Christmas.